disappear at 9:30. And now at 10 o'clock, the other women's caucus group also starts. So we just have no time beyond 9:30 to be in this room. Honourable members, we may not understand everything. This is important just to get to know AG and what they want and expect out of us, because it is like it's an instructive institution that says, honourable members, go out there and do this, that and the other. We alert you to be aware of this and that when you do our oversight. So I think it is in that light. I didn't get a briefing from you guys what you want to do with us, but I would assume that you are going along those lines. Our first meeting with you may not exhaust everything. Can you then shoot? Members will introduce themselves as and when they ask the questions. Introduce yourself and start.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Eugene Dehaan. I'm the Deputy Business Executive for the unit, and I'll ask my colleague just to introduce herself on my left-hand side.
Morning, Honourable Members. My name is Taburum Sisinyane. I'm the Senior Manager responsible for the health portfolio.
So the purpose of today's discussion is first of all what we do and how we can assist the members in terms of executing the oversight, and then also I'm going to touch on our new amendments in terms of the Public Audit Act, what that means, and then also just a brief summary of the outcome of the health portfolio, which my colleague will take us through. So if I could get straight into the slides, I'm not going to touch each and every slide. I will take the slides as read, and I'll only touch on the most important slides, and we can take some questions afterwards. Can you maybe do the slides? Thank you. So if I move to slide number 4, it talks about the mandate of the Auditor General. In section 188 of the Constitution, we are established in terms of chapter 9 of the Constitution. And then we also have our own audit act, our own public audit act, which was established in 2004. And section 20 indicates exactly what we as a primary do as an office. We actually audit the fair presentation of financial statements, and we do review of the compliance of applicable legislation, and then we also review the reported performance against predetermined objectives. Section 5 of our legislation talks about the discretionary audits. This is where we can and may perform special audits, investigations or performance audits. It is obviously at the discretion of the Auditor General. Slide number 5 talks about the delivering on our mandate. Like I mentioned, we audit the financial statements, performance related information, and then also compliance. We report on the findings to the accounting officer or authorities, and then we also report audit opinions and material findings to the legislature. We also then gather commitments from our stakeholders on how they're going to actually address the audit outcomes going forward, and we follow up on those commitments year on year. Then in terms of slide number 6, what we do and what we don't do. So this is a very important slide. First of all, what we do is we provide assurance that the financial statements are free from material misstatements, which means that you as a user can rely on the financial statements, or whether or not you cannot rely on the financial statements, or whether there are certain sections you cannot rely on. We then report on whether or not the performance information or information against predetermined objectives are useful and reliable. We also report on whether there were any material non-compliance with applicable legislation. And then we also identify key control deficiencies that led to the audit outcomes. What we don't do, we audit based on the international standards of auditing, and therefore we cannot provide 100% assurance on all accounts within the department or the entities that we audit. We also don't provide assurance whether or not service delivery has been achieved. We merely just state whether or not what has been represented by the department is true and fair. We also don't provide 100% assurance whether or not all applicable legislation has been complied with. It's also due to our methodology. And then we also don't go out to identify fraud, but we do have an obligation in terms of our international standards of auditing. If we become aware of it, then we have to address the risk and also report to the relevant authorities for them to determine if they want to institute an investigation or how they will then follow up on the matter. But it's not our primary objective. Okay, slide number 7 talks about the audit process. Basically, it starts from our risk assessment. So we will do a risk assessment during our planning phase, where we will then look at various sources of information, get understanding of the auditee, and then also design procedures how to address certain risks that relate to the financial statements, that relate to the performance information, and that relate to compliance. Then we will then perform these procedures, and ultimately in terms of reporting, we will then include in our management report, which is issued to management, a report on how the entity or department have complied with the legislation in terms of how did they, how was their fair presentation presented, and then also we will then also prepare an audit report in which we express an opinion on financial statements, but we don't express an opinion on the performance information, but we do highlight material findings relating to performance information in the audit report, and the same with the compliance. We also highlight material non-compliance. We then move to slide number 8. It talks about the different audit outcomes. So from left to right, you can see moving from green to red, as an indicator then from your clean audit, meaning that you can rely on the financial statements, what's been presented. You can rely on what the department or entity presented in the annual performance report, and there were also no non-compliance, material non-compliance. So that is where we want to be in terms of clean administration. Then you move to the second one, financially unqualified opinion and findings, means that you can rely on the financial statements, but there were some material findings relating to either compliance or performance information that then caused the department to receive unqualified opinion and financial statements, but still some material internal control deficiencies relating to performance or compliance. Then we get the financially qualified. Financially qualified meaning that in the financial statements, there's one specific section that you cannot rely on or it's materially misstated. So, for instance, if we looked at goods and services and we could not determine whether or not the goods and services were complete, we would then only mention that that section of the financial statements is misstated by this amount, but the rest of the financial statements are free from material misstatements. And then there can also be non-material non-compliance matters relating to compliance or performance information. Then the last two audit opinions are the ones that we or you as a department or as an entity do not want to receive, because the first one, adverse, means that the financial statements in totality, there are so many different, there are so many misstatements that it's pervasive to the financial statements. So therefore, you as a user cannot rely on the financial statements in totality. That is a very severe audit opinion. And then the second one, the disclaimer, that's where we could not receive supporting documentation for majority of the financial statements or even performance information. So this one talks to where we were not presented with any information, therefore we could not make a conclusion whether or not your financial statements are supported by reliable evidence. Then on slide number 9, talks about what we do in terms of how we assist. On the right-hand side of the slide, there is a narrative where we will actually share insights in terms of the root causes to the oversight and to the portfolio committee. So we will share, from our view, what are the main root causes that contributed to the audit outcomes, and also what commitments we have received from management and how, what's the progress on those commitments. So those are one of the things then we try to enable the portfolio committee to also execute their oversight by understanding our reports and how you can then hold the account, the accounting officer or accounting authority responsible for implementation of actions for improving audit outcomes. If I then move to slide number 15. So the slides before this were just depicting the trend for the last 10 years over audit outcomes and also the increasing irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, both for local and provincial government, and how it is a matter of concern to us as the Auditor General.
Sorry to disturb you. Will you come back to 11, 12, 13, 14 before you move to 15?
I can. I can move to them now. So. Okay. So slide 11 talks about the 10-year audit outcomes. And as you can see in this picture, green obviously meaning it's clean audits, and red meaning your disclaimer, or purple and pink, your qualified or adverse. So as you can see, over the last 10 years, there hasn't been a lot of improvement from 2008-09 to 2017-18, and you'll see the picture remained more or less the same. And this is something that's alarming for us as the Auditor General, since we make recommendations year on year, but we do find that those charged with governance are not actually making the necessary improvements to change the audit outcomes. We then move to slide number 12. It depicts the history of irregular expenditure. For the last 10 years, it includes local and national and provincial government. And as you can see, what is quite an alarming statistic is the fact that it grew from 1.5 billion to 50 billion in the last 10 years. The same is then on the next slide, 13, that refers to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. As you can see, the graph also increasing over the last 10 years. From, if we take, let's say, local national government, from 52 million to 2.5 billion, therefore showing you that currently there's no improvement happening in terms of these types of expenditure. And again, reiterating fruitless and wasteful, where we could not determine whether or not value for money was obtained, and irregular, where there were non-compliance with legislation in terms of the spending. Then I'm going to skip slide 14 because it also just depicts unauthorized expenditure, but it's got the same pattern of also increasing significantly over the last 10 years. And then slide 15 is the one that's alarming for us.
Okay, hold on there. Welcome, members. We are on slide 15. We started on slide number 1, so you can just get a sense how much you have missed. You're on slide 15. Copies that side so long.
Okay, I'll just wait a bit.
Continue, there's no time, okay. There's a challenge time.
Okay.
The colleagues who don't have copies there yet may look on the screens because there's been being beamed all over the around us.
Okay, thank you, Chair. So slide 15 is one of the most alarming slides for us because there are specific responsibilities of an accounting officer and accounting authority for when you identify fruitless, unauthorized, or irregular, that there are certain consequence management that you as an accounting officer authority need to execute in terms of the PFMA. So if you look at this specific slide, and I'm only going to refer to the left-hand side of the slide being irregular expenditure, you'll see the green indicating that that's the amount of irregular expenditure that's actually been dealt with correctly in terms of the PFMA, and where the money has either been recovered or there's been full investigation done, and they could actually identify
9 million.
The 9 million, which represents less than 1%. But if you look at the pink or the red, you'll see that from the total amount of 194 million, only 173 million it's not been dealt with at all in terms of the legislation or by any of the accounting officers or those charged with governance. So that is quite alarming for us due to the fact that we then cannot determine whether or not anybody should be held accountable or what are the consequences that need to be implemented by the department, specifically the Director General or HOD or your board for the public entities. So this is one of the bases for us for changing our legislation and then also applying for our additional powers that I will get to now in the later on in the presentation. So what are some of the root causes on slide 16? So there are three main root causes on the left-hand side of the slide. First of all, you identify that, or you'll see that one of the root causes are slow response by management to our recommendations, meaning the fact that we keep on recommending the same recommendations over and over and over, year on year, and we don't see any change happening, and we don't see any consequence management being implemented. The second root cause being instability, vacancies, and competencies. What we mean here is that you will see a constant change of leadership in some of these entities or departments, or vacancies, or even some of the staff not being adequately competent in executing their responsibilities. Therefore, this leading to breakdown of internal controls, within the departmental entity, and then also the departmental entity incurring irregular, fruitless, and wasteful or unauthorized expenditure. The last one is one of the key ones, and that is you will find the blatant disregard for consequence management, where you will find the accounting officers or accounting authorities not understanding their responsibilities in terms of the PFMA and not executing their responsibilities in terms of consequence management. And holding, by instituting an investigation to determine who's liable, and then second, holding that person specifically liable or group of people liable for either recovering the money or then having specific consequences going forward. Okay. I then move to slide number 19. So now I'm going to touch on our new legislation. So in 1 April this year, 2019, the President signed our additional amendments to our legislation into existence, and then from 1 April 2019 we are now having additional powers. So what does this mean? So you'll see on the slide there are three main areas of additional power that's been allocated to the Auditor General. First being on the left-hand side, referred material irregularities. So first of all, now we have the power to identify a material irregularity, which I'll come to the definition in the next slide. And then once we've identified the material irregularity, we will then do an assessment. We'll do an assessment to determine whether or not we will perform the investigation ourselves. We will get commitments from the accounting officer how they're going to perform the investigation. Or if we find that we don't have the expertise or the skills within the Auditor General, we will then refer it to our other Chapter 9 institutions for them to follow up. So that is what is meant with referring material irregularities. The second one, taking binding remedial action. So what this means is that we would have identified the material irregularity during the audit. We will then notify the accounting officer of the irregularity, and then we'll request within 20 days written responses on how he or she or the board is going to address this material irregularity going forward. We will then assess these recommendations by the accounting officer. And if we find that they are still not addressing the specific material irregularity, we will make recommendations in our audit report that will then become binding remedial action for them to follow up. And it becomes a legal term which will then be allocated to that specific accounting officer for them to comply with. In our audit report, we also include timelines as to when this should be instituted, and then we will then hold the accounting officer or accounting authority responsible for those binding remedial actions. If we then continue to follow up and we find that the accounting officer or authority is still not implementing these remedial actions, we will then issue a certificate of debt. Certificate of debt meaning that it will be issued in the accounting officer's name, or if it's a board, in the accounting authority's name, and they'll be solely and collectively responsible for the paying back the certificate of debt. So this is in a very short nutshell. I'll explain to you the process, that there are various chances of interaction by the accounting officer or authority before we actually get to the certificate of debt. Okay. Slide number 20. So this is the definition of a material irregularity. So we broke it down into two areas. First of all, the irregularity. So if we refer to irregularity, it means any non-compliance with or contravention of legislation, fraud, theft, or a breach of fiduciary duty. And then the second part of the definition is also it should have been identified during the audit performed under this Act, which means it should have been identified during the normal audit process. And then it should have resulted or is likely to result in a material financial loss or the misuse or loss of a material public resource or substantial harm to the public sector or institution. So it's very important to understand the difference between irregular expenditure and the material irregularity, which I will get to. But first of all, I think, so you will see there's quite a big scope or expansion in terms of our mandate, because now we're not only looking at non-compliance, we also need to take in fiduciary duty and fraud and as such into account, and we need to make sure if we identify any of those instances that it relate to a material financial loss or any substantial harm to the public, because it will then constitute a material irregularity for us to report on and to hold the accounting officer or authority accountable as to how they're going to address the actual material irregularity. So examples on slide 21. So examples of irregularity, first of all, the one that's probably the most easiest is the non-compliance of supply chain management and requiring competitive bidding process. And then if we can identify there was material financial loss, so let's say, for instance, we identify that your proper bidding process was not followed and the department paid excessive rates for goods and goods or services, we will then determine what is the financial loss by the department, and then we will then request the accounting officer, or if it's an entity board, to hold the specific management accountable. The second one is suspected bribery of an official to approve the payments for service not received. Again, moving back to whether or not there was a financial loss. And then the third one is a board of a public entity not exercising their duty of utmost care in investing the funds of the entity, which then also might have resulted in negligence from the board and then resulting in a financial loss. So these are just some of the examples of material irregularities that we will be looking at. We then move to slide 22. So this is the difference between irregular and material irregularity. So irregular expenditure is a contravention of the legislation or the applicable legislation, but a material irregularity includes more. Material irregularity includes non-compliance or contravention. It includes fraud, theft, and a breach of fiduciary duty, and it also then needs to be linked to a likely or actual financial loss or substantial harm. So as you can see, the scope of material irregularity is a bit more detailed and it's wider than irregular expenditure. In terms of difference and impact, the impact is not specified for the PFMA in terms of the irregular expenditure. It requires the accounting officer or authority to go and determine the actual impact. Where with material irregularity, it must have resulted, or there must be indicators that it's likely to result in material financial loss or misuse of substantial harm. So that's the difference. So it's the non-compliance or the breach of fiduciary duty or fraud or theft plus the likely or actual financial loss or impact on the public. So what in the next slide, slide 23, talks about difference value. So irregular expenditure is identified. The value is the expenditure to date or what you've already incurred, where a material irregularity does not always need to have actual expenditure because it can be a likely loss. That is that the department entity is still going to incur going forward. Okay, if I move to slide 25, this is an example of the process. So in step one, we perform the audit. Slide 25. In step one, we perform the audit in April 2019. We then identify material irregularity. In May 2019, we issued the material irregularity to the accounting officer authority, and we give them 20 working days to respond. In June, we then receive the responses, and we will then evaluate the responses whether or not it's appropriate to address the irregularity. If we find the responses are not appropriate, we will then include it in the audit report with our recommendation as to how the accounting authority officer should actually address the material irregularity. We will then do a follow-up in step five, whether or not the accounting officer authority has actually implemented our recommendations. On slide 26, if we find that the accounting officer authority has not or have not addressed our recommendations adequately, we will then give him a notice of an intention of to issue a certificate of debt in his or her name or the board's name. We will then give them another 20 days to respond to our notice as to why they've not addressed it or how they will be then addressing the material irregularity going forward. in step 7. If we still have not received written representation from the accounting officer authority, we will make one more request by our own independent material irregularity committee. There will be a material irregularity committee within the Auditor General that consists of independent people and some of the executives within the Auditor General, which will then make an assessment and make another invitation to the accounting officer authority for oral representation as to why they have not addressed the material irregularity. If we find that the oral representation is still not addressing as to why, or we find that there was just a blatant disregard for addressing the material irregularity, we will then move forward to issue the certificate of debt in the name of the accounting officer authority. One thing that should be noticed, it will not be issued to the in the position, it will be issued to the person's personal name. So even if he moves to another department or entity, that will not move. He will not be condoned from the actual debt. He will still have to pay back the debt. I think one thing that's not included in the slides is that we will issue the certificate of debt to the executive authority for him to actually institute as to how he or her are going to recover the money from the accounting officer or authority. So that's the process. And then we will also keep on following up with the executive authority as to the progress made in terms of recovering the money. Okay, if I move to slide 28. So as I mentioned, this additional powers came into existence 1 April 2019. And as an office, we decided, let us do a phase-in approach so that we don't do it across the board for all audits and first get the understanding as to how to get the process right. So what we identified 16 audits within government, which we then rolled this out. And this was identified based on the criteria of different spheres of government. Also, we had also identified auditees that had high amounts of irregular expenditure and they were also not clearing their regular expenditure or addressing their regular expenditure. So just to give information, health was not scoped into the 16 audits, but we are looking at a rolling out phase 2 next year, and then we'll probably do full implementation 2021 of this legislation. So if I move to slide 33, so what is the role of oversight and executive authority in all of this? So these are some of the recommendations we've made, is to say that the executive authority should insist on credible and frequent reporting on the state of financial performance information. They should use the reports to monitor and direct support accountability, set the tone, share any knowledge on possible material irregularities, and then also support referral and remedial process. So what we mean is that as soon as the department has been issued or with material irregularity, we will also notify the executive authority for them just to follow up and to monitor the process as to how the accounting officer or authority is actually dealing with the matter. In terms of oversight structure, we also said use the information in the audit report on material irregularities for accountability, and then we also said the oversight structure should also request reports on the update of the material irregularities issued and how the department is actually addressing the material irregularities going forward. On slide 34, this is a summary of, it's just a suggestion from our side. So these are the different areas of internal controls that we look at from an audit point of view. And these are different reports within these different areas of operations that the Oversight Committee can request from the department in terms of monitoring the actual performance and financial statements of the departments. So on the left-hand side, you'll find the material irregularities. So that is one of the progress reports. We actually said there must be a progress report prepared by the department. There should be an investigation report, disciplinary cases, all of that can be requested. then financial statements is your normal financial statements, your audited financial statements that the portfolio committee can request. And then in terms of performance management is your strategic plans and your annual performance plan and annual performance reports. I'm not going to touch on everything, but it's just something for the portfolio committee to note that these are the types of reports they can request from the department to come and present. Okay, I'm going to hand over to my colleague on my left-hand side for her to take you through the actual audit outcomes. It's a brief audit outcome of the health portfolio. We did not include 18-19 because it's not yet tabled. We will, however, next month come and present the BRRR on health and the full presentation for 18-19 to the members.
Thank you, Chair. As my colleague has mentioned, I will just go through the outcomes of the health portfolio for the 17-18. This we thought we should present, so at least can give background to the committee of what was taking place in the past 5 years. So slide 37 indicates the audit outcomes of the portfolio over the 5 years. If we note, in 13-14 and 14-15, the portfolio had 5 auditees, but from 15-16, they have 6 auditees. This was there was an addition of the Office of the External Compliance that was established in that year. So when you look at the overall outcomes for the 5 years, there was a regression in the 17-18 financial year. And this was because the Medical Research Council and the Council for Medical Schemes regressed from 16-17 to 17-18, where they were once clean. And then in the 17-18 financial year, they then received unqualified findings. What we also want to highlight is the fact that the National Department of Health has been stagnant over the past 5 years. They've been receiving unqualified audit opinion for the 5 years, and the NHLS for the 2 years they were receiving qualified opinion. I think we also want to highlight that NHLS is currently not audited by the AJSA. It's part of our Section 4.3 audits. They appoint their own auditors. However, for the complete picture of the whole portfolio, we have included that audit outcomes in the picture. And the OHSC then improved in the 17-18 financial year, where they moved from a unqualified with findings to a clean audit opinion. So what we see that is the fact that the financial statements preparation really remains a concern with material adjustments for the entities. I think what we're saying is the financial statements that are submitted for audit contain material misstatements, and those they receive an unqualified opinion because the audit team had raised those findings. The MRC, they regressed because there was non-compliance identified in the 17-18 financial year. So for a while they were clean. However, in the 17-18 there was non-compliance identified. The same with the Council for Medical Schemes. They had issues with the order of prism objectives as well as the compliance. The CCOD that we've highlighted here is one of the audits that was behind for a number of years. However, I think we'd want to highlight the fact that they have started again submitting financial statements. And I think in the slide on commitments will indicate how far they are right now. But for the 5 years, that's why they're sitting as outstanding. Moving in the next slide, we spoke about irregular expenditure. So what we've noticed is the department hasn't had unauthorized expenditure for a while, and with regards to fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the portfolio, it's minimal. However, we wanted to highlight the irregular expenditure over the past 5 years. So the table at the bottom, we try to indicate the irregular expenditure per entity. So you will notice that in 16-17 there was a significant increase in regular expenditure, and this was coming from the NHLS. And in that year, they received a qualification with irregular expenditure. However, in 17-18, there was a decrease. Even though the overall picture indicates a decrease, when you look at the individual entities, the NDOH, the Council for Medical Schemes, and the MRC actually had an increase in regular expenditure in the 17-18 financial year. And 86% of the regular expenditure for 17-18 was coming from the NHLS, and most of the majority of that was because there was payment made on contracts that were not approved by the board. The ONDAH, their increase in irregular expenditure was there was an issue with the classification to transfer payment, where certain non-profit organizations were actually treated as transfer payments were supposed to be goods and services. With the Council for Medical Schemes, their irregular expenditure was because they were procuring from a panel that was not established in terms of the Treasury regulations. So payments to the service providers in that panel then resulted in irregular expenditure. Then the next slide, continuing where we unpack irregular expenditure, that's In that slide, we were trying to indicate the top three types of non-compliance that resulted in regular expenditure. So for NHLS and CMS, there was three quotations that were not obtained. For NHLS, as again, an MRC, it was the local content, where they procured from, for example, furniture, but then the service providers was not complying with local content. And then again, for NHLS and CMS, was bidding. In there, we didn't include NDOH because their situation was a little bit different. So even though irregular expenditure decreased from 967 to 693, the actual instances of non-compliance did not decrease. That's what we are showing at the bottom, where we're saying even though the amount itself decreased, but if we count the instance of non-compliance, they actually did not increase. The decrease actually increased. And this is where we're showing the fact that in the 16-17, it was only NHLS and the OHSC. However, in 17-18, there was the CMS and the MRC. And from the 693 million, we note that 2% was relating to irregular expenditure that was incurred in the prior years that was actually identified in 17-18. 17% was due to contracts. Okay. Which? Page 39. We're in slide 39. Okay, so the top part of the slide shows 2%. What we're saying 2% is, what I'm saying 2% relates to irregular expenditure that was incurred in the prior year but was identified in the current year. And then 17% relates to contracts that were entered into in the prior year. So as at 17-18, they were not condoned yet. So any payments on those contracts will still be irregular expenditure. And then the remaining, which is 81%, which is 512 million, was actually from non-compliance that took place in the 17-18 financial year. Moving to slide 40, on which is key projects. As part of our value-adding initiatives as an organization, we select a number of key projects that we track over their life cycle so that we can already use any findings that we have as red flags for the department. So for the National Department of Health, we had selected the Siloam Hospital and the Declaring. But in the 17-18 year, there was not much movement in declaring, so we then looked at the Siloam Hospital. So in this process, the whole purpose of this is for us to assist the department in identifying the red flags in that specific project. So this is the status as at 17-18. When you do come and present the 18-19, we will present the latest update. So the scope of these key projects, we look at the project planning and project management. This is because these were the two areas we identified that they're the main root causes that results in overruns in projects or delays in the completion of projects. So in this project, we have identified a number of risks, and I'm just going to highlight two where one of them we identified the risk of overpayment, and this was directly linked because we had identified, if you look at the finding section, there was actually a point where there was a duplicate payment that resulted in fraudulent and wasteful. So we said to the department, you have a risk of overpayment in your processes. We also identified a risk of redesign. I think with this project, it was initially planned to be a 350-bed hospital, but then it was changed. So we already saying to them, when you redesign this structure, you have a risk of fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the process. So the findings that we raised there, I've already mentioned the fact that there was fruitless wasteful that we picked up, and then at some instances there was invoices not submitted, and there was an issue where they had to clarify the difference between project management fees and project management fees. So these are the findings we raised. One thing I can raise is I know the department has put in controls to improve the issues we've identified since this is a project we're going to check over a lifetime. So when we present the 18-19, we'll then present an outcome of how far they are and what controls they've put in place with the findings that we are raising here. The next slide highlights the root causes that we have identified that contributes to the overall outcomes of the portfolio. There are four main root causes that we identified. One of them is the slow response by management in improving controls. In this scenario, we're saying we've been raising the findings over the number of years. However, we're noticing that there is a slow response by management to actually establish or implement controls to improve audit outcomes. And this we indicated more on NHS and NDH because the audit outcomes have been constant. At the NHLS, we noted that there was an issue with regards to key vacant positions. At the time of the audit, I think even to date, the position of the CEO and the CFO, they were still acting. They hadn't appointed anyone permanent. So we're saying all this instability in the entity results in the audit outcomes that we're seeing. We also noted an inadequate consequence for poor performance in NHS and NUH. And then the last root cause that we identified is there was a lack of key officials with appropriate officials, I think with competences. With the non-compliance that we identified at the NHLS, the MS and the CMS, what we picked up is the key officials responsible for supply chain management did not understand some of the treasury regulations, and hence there was the non-compliance that was identified. When you look at this minister's commitments, the first one was regarding to the CCOD I mentioned earlier, where they committed to eventually submitting the outstanding financial statements. As of to date, the 2014-15 audit was financial statements submitted for audit, as well as the 15-16. 16-17 was only submitted now. So the department is working on catching up with the audits that were outstanding. With regards to the annual financial statements, the commitments of improving controls, we gave it an orange to say it's in progress, where we have seen an improvement in the number of line items that they were getting material misstatements on. However, overall picture still shows an unqualified opinion with findings due to the few that are remaining. And the same goes with the audit of program objectives. So we have seen changes with the reduction of the number of indicators that we were actually raising material findings on. However, there's still a few. So these were the recommendations that we had presented then to the portfolio committee to say then they must request the departments to submit, for example, the action that the departments or the entities are taking against transgressors, and feedback on how far they are with presenting with implementing internal controls to improve overall audit outcomes. So that was the last slide with regards to the audit outcomes of the health portfolio for the 5 years. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that presentation. Honourable members, we started the meeting with five of us as members of this portfolio committee. That was a quorum good enough to start. That must just alert you that this is like a workshop on what to expect when we are actually doing an oversight on the department. If I may make reference to the presentation, look at slide 15 and 16. That is the most important slide they presented, saying those are the commonest causes of challenges that are there. Now, they are saying these things, they ask the departments, but we tell you these things, and then you come back again every year and things have not changed. Just go and look into these things and just sort out these issues. And I would really request that some of us might just, the researchers may help you get the Presidential Health Summit report, which also tables some of those issues in there. Number two, there was a task team by the Department of Health, a team that was led by Professor Hozek and Professor Green Thompson. Can the members familiarize themselves with that report again? Because at the end of the day, it actually says, Department, you now know what are your challenges. Work on those challenges, and therefore if you do those things, then you really reduce these things. Because it's actually coming in there. But I think I always refer to AG as a experts in post-mortems. They bring things that have happened, and therefore we're looking into things that have happened before. But there are slides of slide 37. It's a fresh information that we need to be aware of. They are charging us to say, on the previous presentations, colleagues, this is what they brought, and therefore on the last slide is what we should request the department to bring to us, to say, Department, our predecessors looked into these things, and therefore these were their recommendations. Can you finish us with these reports? But the fresh audit outcomes that they are referring to, which are going to come into us, will be coming in the next few, how many weeks? In October.
Yes, first 2 weeks of October.
Yeah, hence I may be making reference to another document I want us to attend to. So, colleagues, I would want us to limit any clarity-seeking questions here. Because it is just food for information and a workshop that helps us to move forward. But I do notice that Honorable Wilson wants to ask, No, Honorable Kwakuba, I will not. When did you join us? At what slide did you join us? I'm going to limit. I was watching. At what slide did you join us?
I arrived at slide 10.
Slide 10. Okay. And then. No. I'm not going to have hands. There are two other items I want to raise here, colleagues. You can leave with this presentation and go home. Because in the next 10 minutes, there's a political party that must go on a caucus. And I can't take hands. Because if you all have got hands, let's keep your hands down and let me go to the next item. Honorable Wilson, you were actually troubled because everybody raises their hand. I'm not going to take hands for now. Let's deal with the first two other items, then we come back to the hands. We have a challenge. You raised that, you have a caucus, and we have to honor and respect them.
But I mean, then we don't get the opportunity to ask
them. They are coming back in October, in a month's time. We'll bring them back.
Sorry, Chair. I mean, we just want to ask clarity-seeking questions. If we are going to exercise effective oversight on these departments, then we need to be clear.
All I'm saying is that there are 10 hands, and therefore there's 12 of us here. Now, if that is going to take us to 10 o'clock, it's not going to be doing justice to other people. Let us deal with these two items first. You sit and wait, Professor. Colleagues, can I get some copies distributed to yourself? Portfolio Committee held, today is our almost last day to be together, and when you come back on the 8th, I will need you to be on the meeting on the 9th for the whole day, starting from 8 o'clock until what time, Ms. Rue? 9 until what time, probably. Yeah, this copy that is being distributed to you, I don't want you not to go home without this information. That we will come back on the 9th and have meetings. One of those meetings will be a briefing by the Financial and Fiscal Commission on their analysis of the annual performance and budget of the National Department of Health. So that's very relevant, and therefore it's going to help you. Number two, it will be the briefing by the AG. That is why I'm really cutting you down. There's a briefing by the AG on the 9th to us on their analysis of the annual performance plan and the budget of the Department of Health. So, colleagues, I'm really pleading with you to hold your horses, because the next day you are back here, you will have this meeting. That is the reason why I wanted this distributed now. And then there will be a briefing by the Department of the Presidency, briefing by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation on the process made by the Department of Health in the implementation in progress. So I'm bringing this to you, alerting you that these are the meetings that can shift. I'm pleading with you to consider that when you go away, you come back to these meetings, because we will then be expecting to get the department to come in with a report. But prior to them, we need to listen to these other oversight bodies to deal with that. So that is why I requested that we deal with it. I really wish that you approve this schedule of our meetings, and we have checked on that day. It is what committee week. So it's unlikely that they will be sitting, so we'll really sit on those 2-3 days back-to-back on those meetings. Can I get an approval of that, colleagues? Honorable Jacobs? Honorable Jacobs, you are saying something, or just raise your hand. Approve. I saw Honorable Van Staden next to you up seconding. Thanks. So we'll keep that one side, so that we can then deal with the other issue, colleagues, is on your program. For those who have a program, public number 6, it's expected that I have to write to political parties and inform them that there will be public hearings starting. The date, I will have to actually write, oh no, I'm not sure the copies here. The dates are already there. We have written so long to the House Chair requesting that we start with the public hearings on the 25th of October. And the province started to be visited with Mpumalanga, and then after that we go to Northern Cape. And then those are the ones that are being considered now for approval. The other ones will subsequently later. There's an expectation that we write to your to all political parties informing them of this process that is starting. Related to that, we have received some requests from other stakeholders in the country requesting extension of the 11th, beyond the 11th. So we have since written back to them to say we have received your letter and it is receiving attention, because that also needs a lot of other sort of guidance from the structures of the parliamentary process. So I thought I should just clear those up before we then go back to taking hands. Can I also get the comment on that part?
Hey, person, just for clarity, so obviously you've received now a request for extension, so I take it you will get back to us regarding whether or not those have been granted.
Yeah.
Number two, it is my understanding that the submissions that would have been sent in, or at least, you know, logic would dictate, if, for instance, for some reason we are going to accept the closing date of 11th of October, and you are requesting that we start with public hearings on the 25th of October, my understanding would be that we would need to at least go into the provinces having seen those submissions. We would want to at least have a sense of what the country is saying before we undertake to go to public hearings. So it just, you know, I would just want clarity on that, you know, because that timeline seems quite tight.
No. That part we have got a clarity on. Okay, maybe allow another hand. That clarity we got a time guidance on, and the issue is this way. There's a thousand of submissions that have come through now, and I'm just singling out those that have come in requesting extension. We will not have time. We will have to go through public hearings, come back, finish March, invite people who have indicated they have submissions that they want us to go through. That is what I got as a guide. We can't, before we go, look into the thousands of those that are here. There's quite a lot. All that I'm indicating to you is that there has been those who have requested an extension, but other people have already made comments, which we are noting, and they say, please accept that I want to come and make my submission, and therefore it comes after we have done the country. Honorable Muyai?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think you are in order, because we can't on the basis what is submitted, because they may not represent South Africa as a whole. That is the purpose in which we need to go and do public consultation. I think I agree with that approach. The second thing is that, Chairperson, I think one of the key issues is that I would propose that you also sit with the RCD department to be able to put some structures for you, even to accept possible WhatsApp, because the Electronic Communication System, the Act, accept what we call the short messaging systems. Please consider that, so that people are not limited only to email, because it also have to do with the access of internet in various areas where people live, which the country coverage is not there.
On the second filler, I have made that submission request, and which actually I'm informed it may just need another team of people to manage WhatsApp, which probably has not been put up as one of those options, but it's something that we have raised, and I don't know whether favorability will be considered, but they said that one becomes a separate team to set up to receive such types of correspondence. But on the first one, just to complete the one of Honorable Kwakhube, going out on a public hearing is not, even if we do extend, is not going to be compromised by public, so the receiving of, let's say there's an extension of a week, of a month, that goes on while the prior process starts. So it's not like it's closing. Because in any event, if you receive today and you have planned, you cannot be able to sit and look into what is in-house. But let me get the Secretary, who has also been part of processes like this before, how we deal with the and also the in-house correspondent.
Good morning, everyone. I've received a lot of submissions, but most of the submissions that I've received, those people and stakeholders, some of them are not going to come to make an oral presentation, which is not going to affect the dates that the committee has set aside for the public hearings in the provinces. And two, the most of the stakeholders that are requesting an extension are those stakeholders that are going to come to Parliament when we have our public hearings here in Parliament. Those are after we have finished with all the provinces. That will be next year. So even if the committee were to extend, it's not going to affect the program of going out to the provinces. Thank you.
All that they are writing to say is that by the 11th of October, we might not have finished tidying up our submission, which you have to look into some other time. They are saying, please invite us on a particular day. For now, we are putting together our views. By the 11th of October, we might not have finished putting it together. Can you extend so that, and if that thing comes in, that's fine. So that is what we are saying in consultation. We said, we have received your request. We are considering your submission, meaning that in getting to consult. So that process is what I've actually been briefed. That's what I've been advised to go. So going out into the public does not close any space. It might open up for more. So now that part is done. Let me go back to the hands of the AG. And making sure that I noticed that we have got 4 minutes before other members. I'm glad that you colleagues have helped me with these two items that I wanted to table and they are done. Now, can you stay, for how long do you want to stay here? Let me check from the members of the DA first, because you have a pressure of
time. We can extend for another 10 minutes, Chairperson, and I think it's important that we ask these clarity-seeking questions.
So Honourable Wilson was number one, and I'll start on this. Yeah.
I just want to speak on the process.
Which process?
The member you asked how long can
extend. She says 10 minutes more.
I have a view.
We have a view, yes?
I think let's stick to 4 minutes, because I'll tell you why.
4 minutes, all of us together?
No, we don't do it. You gave us a program that was approved.
Yeah.
The team is coming. We're going to be given an opportunity, even get clarity from the chamber. So it does not change anything. This is my view. But if the team insists for the sake of it, they can still do it. But in my view, I would propose that this item will suspend because they're coming in 2 weeks' time.
Honourable Kwakube, I really want to plead with you.
Chair, Honourable Munyai doesn't have to ask a question. I would like to ask a question. So we've got 4 minutes. We can use the 4 minutes.
But the point, the principle raised that we are meeting today as a portfolio committee. The next day we come back after recess, we'll meet the same team of people to come to present to us.
So what? Hey, person, the reality here is that the AG's office is here to capacitate us on how to effectively practice
oversight.
Okay,
let's go in the middle of the road. Let's extend it for another 7 minutes. Okay. Honourable Wilson, start. Other members are leaving.
I'm going to ask my question, Chairperson, but I'm also going to have a fat bitch before I get there. For 4 weeks, we've had portfolio committees where we've had 1, 2, or 3 entities a day. At not on one of those occasions have we been able to ask or finalize our range of questions, because there's never been time. We are not having one entity at a time and being given the opportunity to properly grill them and get the kind of answers we need. Instead of which we're getting 2 or 3 a day, we keep having to cut sections short. This is now being raised at the Chief Whip's Forum. Thank you. My question, AG, refers to page 30, your slide 32. 32. Hi, that's the oversight initiatives, okay. And you've got the implemented by oversight and the oversight gaps. And I have two concerns there, because I think one goes hand in hand with the other. And the one is the advocate for ministerial accountability for poor governance, okay. And I think one of the major concerns, and we've actually heard it out of the mouths of ministers, is that I'm not the person responsible. I didn't do it. Please clarify the minister's role on this, because as far as I'm concerned, he is the overall accounting officer, the overall what's the word I'm looking for? He's in charge. That he is responsible for everything that happens in his department or his entity. And all too often we hear, I wasn't the accounting officer, I wasn't the responsible person. As far as I'm concerned, he was. And that links to your oversight gaps, and in particular to limited committee resolutions and debate reports in the House in order to maximize impact. And I think this is a serious gap, because, and we need your guidance on this, because what happens is we will get your report. We will do a committee report on that with recommendations, and that's where it ends. That's where it dies a poor, sad, and dark death. From the AG's point of view, what would you like to see this committee do in order to assist you and assist us? And what more do we need to do to hold the actual minister to account? Thank you.
Now, Honourable Wilson, let me address this first part before they come in with other questions. It was myself who, when I invited all members of the political committee, since we met, that we are getting entities. Firstly, we had a whole day with the department, and all of us had a field of questions to the department. I said thereafter, we are going to get all other entities to come and give us an introduction of who they are, what they do, and then we get an idea who they come from. And that was not, I even said it, I was not expecting that we are going to be exhaustive with them in terms of questions. So I think if you miss that part, I'm really saying it again. All the entities, including that we met yesterday, now listening to NHLS story from AG makes a bit of a sense, because we had a glimpse of what they do, including MRC. They didn't tell us about their challenge yesterday, but now we have an idea. So that is what I explained, that we will be getting all entities just to come and introduce themselves, have an a meet and greet and understand a bit of what they do, so that go down the line will make a sense. So I was very mindful that I did not give you all the time to exhaust all questions, but it was intentional to get all of them to come and make presentations to us. That is exactly what we did until yesterday. Honourable Kwakhube?
I'll be very, very quick, Chairperson. The question is directed around the expanded mandate, and you said that the implementation started on the 1st of April, but you also said that you are now doing a phased approach. So what I want to understand is, from then until now, have there been any outcomes of this new expanded process, and so what have been some of the consequences? But the most critical point really that I want to understand is that there are 8 of the 9 provincial health departments which have adverse audit outcomes almost annually. So what is the role of the national department, or at least the executive authority to whom we exercise oversight as this committee, in ensuring that there are internal audit mechanisms that are implemented and red flag systems so that people are held accountable? Because not only is NDOH stagnating in terms of its own audit outcomes, but the provinces as well, who are the real implementing agents of healthcare, are seriously in trouble. So what is really the role of the national minister in terms of holding those departments to account for adverse audit outcomes? And then lastly, the allocation of the certificate of debt. In a situation where there is clear sort of criminality that is can be seen, can that process not be shortened? Does it have to span out over several months just as a process?
Those are the two questions that people insisted they wanted. Okay, let's answer those two.
Thank you, Chair. So I'll start with the very first one. What is the role of the executive authority? So I think the PFMA is written to make specific reference to the accounting officer as the DG for national departments and then your HOD for provincial departments. So that's why the executive authority will say that it's not his responsibility, but he does have a responsibility in terms of oversight and making sure that all your governance structures are implemented. So that is in terms of the executive authority's role, is to ensure that the oversight, he monitors oversight over his portfolio. But the actual, let's say, consequence management and misappropriation of assets and those things are then the accounting officer's responsibility to follow up, to implement and to investigate and to determine who needs to be held liable. So if you want to, as a recommendation, if the portfolio can want to focus on who is actually responsible, it will be the the DG more, to hold the DG a bit more accountable and to see what influence or what oversight role that the executive authority do to actually then enforce the accounting officer to be held holding the people accountable. So that's why, if you want to rely on if you want to rely on the legislation purely, you'll see the legislation is more written towards the Director General or the accounting authority for them to execute those specific executive functions. Okay. So in terms of committee resolutions and how can they... So I think at the end of the day, it comes back to what I just mentioned now, is to say that as a committee, you can make resolutions. You can then forward it down to the accounting officer or accounting authority and for them to come and give you feedback continuously as to how they're actually addressing those resolutions that you've made. You can also then involve the executive authority for them to ensure that they actually provide the necessary oversight to make sure that they actually have mechanisms in place for the accounting officer to address these commitments. But again, if you want to look at the peer legislation, you want to use the legislation, it will be better, just my personal recommendation, is then to rather rely on the PFMA and look towards the accounting officer, which will be the direct one who can have a direct impact in the department, or is actually responsible in terms of the PFMA to ensure they've got effective controls, needs to ensure there's an audit committee, needs to ensure they have internal audit, they need to ensure all of those, your governance structures are actually in place. Because most of the outcomes and the negative outcomes emanate from where there's a lack of controls or where there's no audit committee or where there's no internal audit. So as soon as you start breaking down on those structures that institute internal controls, that's where you start identifying then the poor audit outcomes. It starts actually coming up. The same with your movement of your executive structure. So as soon as you have a lot of acting DGs or a lot of acting CFOs or you have an acting head of supply chain, that also starts becoming a weakness in controls, and that's then how. So if you look at NHLS, them not having a SCM specialist in competencies, that's how they then start incurring irregular expenditure. What we're saying with irregular expenditure, there are five pillars of irregular expenditure that's defined in the Constitution 217, and one of them are value for money. So the problem is, although we say that you didn't follow, let's say, prescripts of supply chain, we're not saying that fraud was identified or whatever, but we are saying we could not verify, first of all, it was transparent, it was competitive, that value for money was obtained. All of those criteria was actually met. So that's what irregular expenditure then means, and also the breakdown of controls actually leading to that. Okay, in terms of, it's a difficult one. The way the legislation is written is your executive authority is on the same level as your MEC in the province. So you will find specific votes. So to give an indication, let's say, and probably my colleague will help me a bit more here, but I'm thinking now my previous audits. What will happen is that your DG within national or your executive authority within national can only influence the provincial, but they can't enforce for certain commitments onto the provincial departments. So what we started doing from our side is we've got a health sector report, which we will come and present to you as soon as it's done. We'll explain exactly. But what we're doing is we're identifying key focus areas across the board for all, national and provincial, and also to follow the money as to how it gets transferred from national to provincial for specific priorities. So the only influence that the national department has on the provincial department is where there are specific grants earmarked for specific purposes that the provincial department needs to execute in terms of, let's say, a specific DORA grant or a specific infrastructure earmark grant or medical supplies or the specific, or the HIV and AIDS fund, which is quite the biggest one in the department. So that's the only one how the DG and Minister of Health can execute any commitments from the provincial departments. Where there are any normal funds that are not allocated, your premier and your MEC can redirect that funds in any way he or she finds the need for that province to be. So therefore, in my previous audit, the previous DG used to say, I can only influence. I can't tell the HOD, I can't tell the MEC what to do in that province. We influence because obviously what we want to do is make sure that we're all working towards the same goal. So what we then started doing is in terms of your MTSF. So if you look at your MTSF and the requirements for MTSF for health, make sure the department is aligned with MTSF through to the provincial department. In that way, you see that they're actually working together striving for the same common goal. So that's maybe just a recommendation. But yeah, it is something that has been off debate for some time. I don't know if you want to add. Okay. Did I answer everybody's question?
Yeah, no.
Okay, thank you.
Are you aware that you are back on the 9th?
All right, Chair.
Yeah, so you can just summarize in 5 minutes' time what you told us today, because half of our members did not really get it. You can't go through it again, but when you're going to give us the next one is to rehash, starting from at least slide number, if you can rehash from slide number 37 coming this way, at least you'll be comparing what has been happening with what we are going to be presenting to us. Another 3 minutes just to rehash from slide 1 to slide 37. It will be important for members, though I'm going to encourage them to read this document so that you can be up to speed, because most of us are new in this type of responsibility that we're in. Thank you very much, honorable members. That brings our meeting to a close.